So it's Parshas Behar B'chukosai, page 696, to begin with. First of all, before we begin, today's shir is dedicated to the neshama of Shmuel Tzvi ben Rav Yosef, which is Rona's father. Today's the yahrzeit. Sorry, your husband's yahrzeit. Wish the neshama should have an aliyah, and he should be a long life, and all family should only have lots of bracha and health and success. So we'll just begin with an overview. So it's a double parasha, 696. It's a double parasha once again, being it's not a leap year. It's a long parasha this week. It's also Shabbos Mevarchim this week as well. So the parasha begins with the laws of Shmita, the seventh year, which the land has to lie fallow. The laws of Yovel, which is the 50th Jubilee year. There's a bunch of mitzvahs dealing with the helping people who are in financial trouble. People have to sell out and either sell their property or sell themselves, and we have to help them and ransom and redeem them, which is connected with the laws of land redemption. Sorry, typo over there. That's all Parshas Behar. Then in Bechukosa we have the promises of rewards if we keep the Torah and mitzvahs. We have a big section called the Toichacha this week, which is the reprimand. Very sharp and very harsh part of the Torah, which we'll talk about a little bit further. In fact, it's so harsh that the minhag is, it happens this week, B'chukaisa, and it also happens in Parshas Kisavoy, which is 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah. Again, we have that part of the Torah, and the minhag is that we don't actually call up anyone for an aliyah. What we do is just the Baal Korah, the person who's reading the Torah, just takes the aliyah himself. We don't want to call anyone up for that aliyah, so to speak, right? That's the thing. And also the minhag is that the Baal Korah, the Lena, the reader, when he gets that portion, he goes lower and quicker. So I'd like to say as if, yeah, it's part of the Torah, but we don't want this to happen. So that's in B'chukosai. The second part, because it's a double parasha, right? Mm-hmm. In the second parasha, so like it's in the middle of there, there's like this long section of warning us that if you don't keep the mitzvahs, what will happen to us? And it's quite graphic and goes into a lot of detail. So, I mean, the truth is, it is part of our 13 principles of faith, that there is a concept of reward and punishment. We do believe in that, that's no question. But nevertheless, we try to judge people favorably, and we try to have Hashem judge us favorably, and always pray and daven that these things don't happen. Then we have what's called the laws of Erchin and Hekdesh. It's like if someone promises to the Beis HaMikdash the value of something or the value of another person, or consecrates their field, and so on. All these kind of different halachas all dealt with in that section as well. We have something called Maser Behemo, which is the tithe given 10% of all animals, one every tenth animal of new animals that is born to a farmer in Israel has to be brought as a sacrifice. In Talmud, the Beis HaMikdash it is. And then also we have the law, finally in the B'chukosa, we have the laws of Temura. Temura means that the halacha is that if one has a korban, if one has a consecrated animal that is dedicated to a sacrifice for Hashem, one is not permitted to transfer. One is not permitted to transfer the holiness of that korban to another animal, because there is a concept sometimes with kedusha, you can redeem something with something else. In other words, you can transfer the holiness from one thing to another, but you're not supposed to do that with a sacrifice. And if you do that, the Torah penalizes the person and they both become karbonis, so you don't get anything. So that's all about the laws of Temura. So that's a bit of an overview of the parasha. Now, what I thought we'd do, I actually want to go more into the second parasha, the B'chukosai. I'll just share with you one thought on Behar before we do that. That's on page 696. A few psukim. So again, page 696. There are handouts here because some of you might need that. Thanks. I'll give you a few so you can just pass it around. Thank you very much. So the Torah says, "Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe, Behar Sinai Lemor." Hashem spoke to Moshe at Har Sinai, saying, "What did he say?" He said the famous mitzvah, "Daber el Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, Omarto Aleim, and say to them, Ki Sovoyu el Haaretz." When you come to the land, Asher Ani Noisein Lachem, which I will give you, B'Shafsa Ha'aretz Shabbos LaHashem, and the land will rest a Shabbos to Hashem, which means Sheish Shonim Tizra Sadacha, 6 years you will plow your fields, Sheish Shonim Tizra Kamecha, 6 years you will prune your vineyards, Vesafta Tfuasa, you will gather in your produce, Ubashona Hashvis, in the 7th year, Shabbos Shabboson Yiyye La'aretz, Shabbos LaHashem, it'll be a Shabbos for Hashem, Sotchole Sizra, you shall not plow your fields, Karmachole Sizma, don't prune your vineyards, and so on and so forth. And then in the next paragraph, the Torah goes on to tell us that you count seven Shmitas, seven cycles of seven, right? So you count 49 years, and then the 50th year is the year of Yovel, right? Jubilee year, the 50th year. What happens on Yovel? Yovel is a very special year. Incidentally, we have Shmita nowadays, but we don't have Yovel anymore. Because Yovel only applies when most of the Jewish people live in Israel at the time of the Beis Hamikdash and so on and so forth. But in those times we did have Yovel. Yovel meant, number one, you had to keep the laws of Shmita an additional year. That year also you weren't allowed to work the fields. And also a lot of stuff used to happen in Yovel that used to have... that year was considered a holy year, and if someone was a slave, they used to go free, meaning a Jewish slave used to go free in the year of Yovel. If someone bought land, essentially, it's interesting, essentially in Israel, in biblical times at least, in temple times, you couldn't actually buy land forever, because land belonged to the original tribe. So there was no such thing as actually buying a piece of property that should be yours forever. It was more about leasing, you could long-term lease a land. So what used to happen is that in the Yovel year, the lands used to go back to the original owners. That's, in other words, it was like a reset button year. It was a holy year, everything back to its normal. The slaves went free, the land went back to the original owner, and so on and so forth. So I just want to show you, again, I want to go into Parshas B'chukosai more, but I want to just spend a few minutes on, just to share with you one vort. And one vort's like this, that the Rashi says, a famous question, the Torah begins here by saying, that Hashem spoke to Moshe at Har Sinai, saying. It doesn't say that with every mitzvah, right? So Rashi says a famous line, Ma inyan shmita es la Har Sinai. What shmita got to do with Har Sinai? I mean, every mitzvah, obviously, you know, what's there? So Rashi says that it's coming to teach us something, and that is, that the Torah used shmita as an example, that, just like we find by shmita, that the Torah emphasized that the mitzvah, with all its details, were given at Har Sinai, because this Torah goes to all the details of shmita. So therefore the Torah is saying it all happened at Har Sinai. So too it teaches us that in essence all the mitzvahs were like that. All the mitzvahs are given at Har Sinai, although they were taught later, they were expounded upon later, but they were all given, the general principles and the specifics were all given at Har Sinai. That's the reason that the Torah says here that Hashem spoke to Moshe at Har Sinai. Right? The Kliyokar says an interesting little word. The Kliyokar says, okay, that's fine. That's nice, but why choose Shmita for that, right? So the Kliyokar says that actually the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai, which we're going to celebrate in Mitzvah Hashem very soon on Shavuos, is very much hinted at the whole mitzvah of Shmita and Yovel. And in fact, he says the Pshat, that's why the Torah says Har Sinai, to teach us that the laws of Shmita and Yovel, actually one could say, is part of the meaning of the mitzvah, is to remember Har Sinai. Why? What happens in Shemitah, as we said before? Shemitah, you count 7 years, and then you have Shemitah. Then you count seven times seven, and you have the 50th year, that's the year of Yovel, right? That's a holy year. That year, the slaves go free, and so on and so forth. He says that's exactly what happened in Har Sinai. The Jewish people left Mitzrayim, and they counted seven times 7 weeks, like the seven Shemitahs, right? What happened on the 50th day, like the Yovel, when once they counted the seven cycles of seven, The 50th day became holy. That was the Yom HaNun, the 50th day. That's the day of Shavuos. And that's the day Hashem gave the Torah. And that's the Torah also is the concept that makes everyone free. In other words, the Torah is what frees a person. He doesn't mention this, but the Pirkei Avos says that Ein lecha ben chayrin elosh misha oisev haTorah. Who's a truly free person? A person who's connected with the Torah. The Torah gives us internal freedom. The Torah makes us connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah releases us from being slaves to ourselves and being free to serve Hashem. So therefore, exactly what happens in Yovel, that we say the slaves go free, that's what happened on the 50th day, the day of Har Sinai, the day of Matan Torah. that we achieved that concept of freedom on the 50th day, which was the holy day. And that's why the Kli Yakar explains that the Torah mentions Har Sinai here at the beginning of the Parsha, because the Torah wants to tell us that this law of Shmita and Yovel is actually to remember Har Sinai, because it parallels the 7 times 7 years, then the 50th year of Yovel, so to the Omer 7 times 7 weeks, and the 50th day is the day of Matan Torah. Yes, that's what we're saying. Yeah, let's go to the Omer. Yeah. So it's a nice little pshat, and it fits in nicely why we say Bahar Sinai. It also very fits in because this parsha we always read a couple of weeks before Shavuos, so it all very much fits in. Okay. So that's just a vart I want to say on Parshas Bahar, but I want to more go into the concept of Parshas Bechukosai. So you turn to page 708. Before we do Bavash Bechukosai, I want to just spend a minute, if you don't mind, just digress for a second, and ask for your help on something. I don't like to do this, so I like to just go with the shiur straight, but it's got to be done. So as you know, Bina's launched a 20th year campaign, awareness campaign. Hence the sign over here as well. Bina is turning 20, Mr. Shem, in a few months. So what we've been doing is, you probably noticed from the emails, we've, for now, we've just launched the idea, and for the next month, the idea is to use the 20-year opportunity to really get Bina on the map much more than it is. For each shir to go way beyond the shir, in other words, to go way beyond the people that come to Bina, the hundreds of people that come to Bina, Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem, over the 20 years, it's grown into a very big organization with lots of different shirim. I was saying on Shabbos, I don't know if everyone realizes in each shir that it's part of a very, very big thing. Like there's close to 40 shirim a week, and the emails and the podcasts and the thing. So there's Baruch Hashem, thousands of people learning every week. Including overseas, actually, with all the recordings and the audio learning and things like that. So it's big, thank God. Although not always felt in every individual shir. But we want to make it even bigger, and the idea is to really use this opportunity to expand. So we're going to be, as I say, doing an awareness campaign over the next couple of weeks. But also, after that, we're going to launch a date. We're going to have a big function in Meretz Hashem on the 22nd of August. That's a Tuesday, 22nd of August. So you can diarize the date already. We're going to try to get a big crowd there. Obviously, we're going to also connect with a fundraising campaign as well to give us the ability to consolidate and to expand, to really expand the programs even more than we are. So why am I talking about it now? Because I need everyone's help. The people that come to Bina, we need everyone to join in. First of all, to spread the word. Those of you who are on social media, which I'm not recommending, incidentally, but as I said, Shabbos. But if you happen to be on social media, and you'll see a lot of posts, because we are on social media and for marketing purposes. So if you see Bina posts, just push them forward, share them, and so on and so forth. But also what we're going to do is, we're going to, and this is the hard ask, so you ready to go out of your comfort zone? Perez is getting nervous. So in a couple of weeks, we're going to start a social media video campaign. Basically what we're going to do is, we're going to post a lot of 40-second videos of different people from Bina. And we're going to be asking people to be willing to video themselves for 40 seconds. Just to, if you really can't do it, that's fine. But if you can, it'll be really a big help. Just to say something, either like what Bina's taught you, or how Bina's inspired you, or why Bina's an important thing. And then to mention the date of the function at the end. And to hold up a sign that we've specially made for the videos. So we'll have like a whole social media campaign. So not everyone at once, I understand. Everyone's going to be really willing to do this, but so if we can maybe even get a couple today, it would be great. Just want to prepare them over the next few weeks. Also, for those that are not terribly camera shy, if after the share today, if we can get a group photo in front of the sign from the share. Okay? If you really can't take pictures, I understand. But if you don't mind, I know some of you are anti-pictures, that's okay. But if you don't mind, just do a little bit of a group photo in front of the sign from the Prasha Shir. Sorry, thank you. Yeah, I know it's might be out of some people's comfort zone, but you know, we'll go. Anyway, so that's my ask. But just generally over the next few weeks, watch out for the email, watch out for the social media posts, Facebook, Instagram, and so on. So push them forward, spread the word. Yeah, we need to grow, we need to expand, and we need a lot of money. So that's the campaign. Back to the shir. Okay, Parshas B'chukaisai, page 708. I'm going to be doing this at every shir, by the way, so you're not, I'm not picking on you. Okay. As I say, I don't like to interrupt shirim for these things, so make it worthwhile, okay? Page 708. So we have Parshas B'chukaisai. Let's just have a look at Parshas B'chukaisai. Let's see what the first few psukim say, and then we'll try going into the whole thing and understand a couple of things. So, let's take it first of all on a very simple level. Torah says, "Im b'chukaisai." It talks about the reward. "Im b'chukaisai telechu." If you walk in my decrees, let's mismoisai tishmeru, and you keep my mitzvahs, v'asisim oisam, you will do them. Then v'nasati gishmeichem be'itam, I will give rain in its right time. V'nosna aretz yivula, and the earth will give its produce. Eitz hasod yitem pirioi, and the fruit of the tree will give its fruit, and so on. And it goes through a whole bunch of different beautiful, beautiful blessings. Then what happens is the Torah turns to the curses. Okay, it's called reprimand, toichacha. Now, as I said before, it is harsh. Although interestingly enough, the Mefarshim explain, as we'll come to it a bit later more in detail, that the curses actually contain hidden blessings. On the surface, they sound very, very harsh. However, they also contain certain blessings, and Kabbalistically, there's an idea behind it that sometimes the blessings that Hashem gives us are so powerful that they're not able to be revealed or communicated in a clear way, and they're communicated in a cryptic way to the point that they sound harsh. But in fact, they contain lots of amazing things, and they could be transformed to blessings because they contain blessings as well. A little bit later on, I'm going to give you an example. But before we do this, let's just learn a Rashi to understand the first pasuk. The pasuk says three things, right? If you walk in my decrees, if you guard my mitzvahs, and you do them. That's three things. Walk in the decrees, guard the mitzvahs, and do them. So let's have a look at the Rashi. The Rashi is at the bottom of your handout, right? Rashi says the following. Yochol ze kiyum mitzvahs. What does it mean to walk in Hashem's decrees? You might think that this refers to mitzvahs, keeping mitzvahs. Which, by the way, some of Farshim do explain it away. Some of Farshim, like the Sefarna, says that it's talking about mitzvahs. But Rashi disagrees, and he says, you might think it's talking about mitzvahs. Well, it doesn't make sense that, because kashu oimer ves mitzvois sai tishmeru, but the next part of the pasuk, it says that you'll keep my mitzvahs. Vasisim oisim, when you'll do them, harei kiyum mitzvahs omer. The Torah has already mentioned the keeping of mitzvahs. So it's repetitive. So it's difficult for me to say, says Rashi, that the first phrase in the pasuk, im b'chukaisai telechu, if you walk in my decrees, is a reference to observance of mitzvahs, because that talks about the next minute in the pasuk. Ha'ma'ani mekayim es b'chukaisai telechu. So what do I think it means, therefore, says Rashi? How do I translate the phrase, im b'chukaisai telechu, if you walk in my decrees? The answer is, shetihiyu amelim b'toira. That you shall be work hard, toil in Torah. That's what it means. In other words, im b'chukaisai telechu actually is not referring to keeping the mitzvahs. It's referring to the study of Torah, but in a manner where a person invests effort and works hard. That's what it's talking about. So therefore, the pasuk is talking about both the study of Torah and the performance of mitzvahs. Second part of the pasuk is talking about performance of mitzvahs. The first half is actually talking about the study of Torah. Yeah? Which leads us in to a very interesting kliyoker, which I want to share with you. I'm going to just... Wait one second here. Okay. And the kliyoker says the following. Because the kliyoker points out a very interesting thing. He says, if you look, I'll just show you how this works. If you look at the second pasuk, right, it says, I will give the rain, v'nosati, right? You see that? Second line from the top, v'nosati, I will give the rain. Now, so he points out in this parsha, in this paragraph of the rewards, it says v'nosati three times. The one time it talks about, I'll give the rain in its right time, and it goes on to talk about the produce and parnasa and so on. Right? The next time it talks about Vinasati is, give me 1 second. Oh, go to Pasuk Vav, Pasuk 6, which says, Vinasati Shalom Ba'aretz, I will give peace in the land. Right? And you will dwell without trembling. And the next Pasuk, in the middle of the Pasuk says, V'cherev le'savar ba'artzchem, and no sword will pass your land, and you will win the wars, and so on and so forth. Right? And then the third one is at the bottom of the page, Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, right? The last word on the page, it says, V'nasati, if you turn over the page, V'nasati mishkoni b'sochem, I will put my sanctuary among you, meaning I will dwell among you. Okay? And you'll be my nation, and so on and so forth. So the Cleocus says interesting, he says, you look at the rewards are divided into three. The first one is talking about rain and parnasa, right? The second one is talking about overcoming wars and winning the enemy and achieving victory. And the third one is talking about Hashem's presence amongst the Jewish people. He says, what's the idea? The idea is that these three sets of rewards correspond to the three phrases in the Pasuk. Again, remember, there's three phrases in the Pasuk. Walk in my decrees, guard the mitzvahs, and do them. So now we know from Rashi that walking in Hashem's decrees is not talking about mitzvahs, it's talking about learning Torah. Yeah? So what's mitzvoisai tishmeru v'asisim oisim? What's the second two expressions? He says an interesting thing. That we know the mitzvahs are divided into two, negative commandments and positive commandments. Right? Lois asay and asay. We know there's a Gemara that says that every time you have in the Pasuk where it says hishomer pen, like be careful, keep this. It's always talking about a negative commandment. For example, by Shabbos we have the same thing. You know, by Shabbos there are two expressions. Remember Shabbos and guard the Shabbos. Remember Shabbos is the positive of Shabbos, like Kiddush and Challah and all these things. Shomer Shabbos, keeping Shabbos, means not doing what you're not supposed to. Right? So it's like negative commandments. So therefore, since the Kliyakar bets mitzvoisai tishmeru, guarding the mitzvahs means the negative commandments. The last phrase of the Pasuk, va'asisem oisem, and you will do them, refers to mitzvahs asay, the positive commandments. So the three paragraphs, the three expressions of the Pasuk is learning Torah, keeping the negative commandments, keeping the positive commandments. Yeah, we're clear? So he says, corresponding to that is the three rewards. Why? First one is rain. Have a look at the rain, what it says there. It says, V'nosati gishmeichem be'itom. Right? I will give you rain in its right time. What does it mean, its right time? So Rashi explains that the ultimate reward when Hashem gives us rain, which we know is a big bracha, because it's a source of parnasa and so on and so forth. So rain in itself is always a bracha. But the real bracha with rain is when Hashem gives rain in a convenient time, in its right time. And it says, ultimately Mashiach will come, when all these rewards will be achieved in its proper, in its extreme way. It'll never rain when people need to go outside. It'll rain like late at night. The example that's given is Friday night. If people are not traveling around, late at night, Friday night, everyone's at home, sleeping, it's all good. That's a good time to rain, right? So, normally you don't complain. When it rains, you say the simon bracha. You can't be greedy. But the truth is that the ultimate bracha is not just rain. The ultimate bracha is rain in its right time. What's the idea? It says like this. We said the first expression. So he says, first of all, he says that we find the Gemara that rain is connected with Torah learning. In general, food is connected with Torah. Bread is connected with Torah. Eating bread, like bread, the Torah is compared to sustenance. We also know it says, "Emein kemach in Torah," that we need sustenance to learn Torah, the Pirkei Avos says. Right? And the Gemara says that when there's a drought and when rain stops, and if Hashem wants to use the punishment of withholding rain, it's normally on account of neglecting Torah study. Right? So there's definitely this connection between rain and Torah study. But he takes it a step further. The rain in its right time. What does that mean? So he says like this. He says, if the first expression is referring to learning Torah, which we said, right? Im chukoy saite leichu. Rashi says, I can't be talking about mitzvahs because mitzvahs already says. So, okay, so it's talking about Torah. So why did the Torah say that? Im chukoy saite leichu. It should say, im tilmudu Torah, if you learn Torah. Why does it hide the mitzvah of learning Torah in the phrase of walking in Hashem's decrees? Doesn't sound like Torah study. Correct? So he says the following, which I'll just expand using some other mefarshim to enhance his point. He says, actually, M'chokosai Telechu is not only talking about regular Torah study. It's talking about a commitment to Torah study that is unconditional, the concept that we call kvius itim la Torah, to set aside times with an unbelievable commitment to learn Torah. The Shulchan Aruch says it's not enough just to learn Torah, one has to also be koveya itim. One has to set aside specific times which a person is then committed to learn Torah. Right? And he quotes the pasuk I put on your handout. The pasuk says, which is coupled with the medrash says, well, the pasuk says, first of all, in Tilim it says, Chashafti derochoi. Dovid HaMelech says, I have considered my ways, my pathways. Ve'ashiva raglai al eidoi secha. And I've turned my feet to your testimonies, to your Torah, in other words. What does that mean? See, he says, the medrash says, what does it mean that Dovid HaMelech says, that I've always considered where to go to every day, where should I travel, what should I be going to, and I've managed to achieve that I've trained my feet to go to the shir. Right? I've trained my feet to go to the Beis HaMedrash. That's how ingrained the commitment to setting aside time as Torah study has become. In other words, what the Pasuk of here is talking about is not just the concept of Torah study, it's talking about Torah study with an unbelievable commitment. And like an unwavering commitment. Which is also why the Torah chose to talk about Torah study using the word chukim, the chukoisai. What's a chok? A chok is a decree. It's something that you don't have to understand, you just have to listen to. It's a commitment thing. Because normally when we talk about mitzvahs, and we say mitzvahs are divided up into different parts, the word chukim, right? The word chukim refers to mitzvahs which we don't understand. It's mitzvahs we keep because we committed. That's it. We do understand. We don't understand, we just do it because Hashem said so. Same thing with Torah study. We have to have that level of commitment to Torah study. That's the way of chukim. And it's teilechu. You have to go. You have to walk to the shir. You have to go to the shir. You have to go to the designated time to learn Torah automatically. Right? So that's what the Pasuk is talking about. Not just stam learning Torah. Says the Kli Yarka. That's why corresponding to that concept, the Torah promises rain, but not just rain. Rain in its right time. Rain generally is a reward for studying Torah. But if you do it in a way of b'chukosai teilechu, your study of Torah is with a commitment that you set aside times and you're not sort of committed to them and it's really ingrained, so I will commit to certain times also, Hashem says. I won't just give you rain randomly. I will give you rain at a particular time that's convenient for you. If you commit to times learning Torah, not just learn Torah, but commit to the times of learning Torah, I will commit to the rains in certain times as well. And that's why it says, v'nasati gishmeichem be'itam, I will give you rain in its right time. That will come as a reward for the designated times of learning Torah. That's reward number one. Then he says, have a look at the second v'nosati. The second v'nosati I will give you is peace and overcoming enemies and removing the threats. That's security, etc. That's removing the threats in the land of Eretz Yisrael. What is that all about? He says that corresponds to the second phrase of the Pasuk. The second phrase of the Pasuk is, you'll guard my mitzvahs, which you said before, refers to mitzvahs loisaseh, the negative commandments. So we know, what's the difference between negative commandments and positive commandments, right? Hashem gave us a Torah, there's two kinds of mitzvahs. There's mitzvahs, positive commandments, and there's negative commandments. What's the difference? So like this, positive commandments are about connecting to Hashem. Negative commandments are more about removing those things that stand in the way of our connection to Hashem. In other words, positive commandments is engaging in things which are holy and pure. Negative commandments are removing the impurity. Okay? So it's like you put a delicious dish on a dish, on a plate, for example. First thing you want to do is make sure the dish is clean. Right? Putting a beautiful dish on a plate that's dirty doesn't make sense. Same thing. Whenever we do a positive mitzvah, we bring down holiness into the world. Whenever we do a positive mitzvah, we bring down Hashem's greatness into the world. Hashem's kedusha. Right? And we fill our lives and our environment with holiness. But we don't want it to be in an environment that is impure. So therefore Hashem gave us the mitzvah loisa, say, the negative commandments, which is it's about not engaging in the things which are negative, to stay away from that which is impure. That's negative commandments, removing the impurity. Therefore, says the Kli Yakra, the reward for that is removing the threat, the negative threat that's in the land of Israel. Security. Shalom Bo'aretz. Not having a sword come through your land. That's corresponding to Loisa say. Because just like Loisa say is negative commandments are removing the impurity, the reward is the removal of anything that is threatening or dangerous. And then finally, the last Venosati, Hashem says, I will give you my sanctuary within you. I will dwell among you. You'll be my nation. What's that? That's corresponding to the last phrase of the Pasuk, which is Vasisem Oisam. right? You will do this. And that's mitzvah saseh, the positive commandments. Should I say, what's the reward for positive commandments? Exactly what the positive commandments achieve, which is if you do the positive commandments, I will dwell among you, I'll send my holiness among you, and you'll be in an environment of kedusha and holiness. So that's very, very beautiful how it fits in. Three phrases in the pasuk: Torah, negative commandments, positive commandments. Three rewards: rain in its right time for Torah learning and in its right time, removing security threats and danger because of Mrs. Loisa say negative commandments, and dwelling amongst us as a reward for positive commandments. Okay. Now we'll come back to the pasuk in a minute, but I want to just talk a little bit about an interesting medrash, an interesting concept. We know one of the things that about this parasha, we said that the toicha, the curses, actually contain tremendous bracha if we do them right. There's a very fascinating medrash. The medrash says, I'll read it to you. The medrash says like this. Also based on the same pasuk where David HaMelech says, I've considered my ways. So it says the medrash like this. Reb Abba berei de Rab Chiya. Reb Abba, the son of Rab Chiya, said the name of Rav Yochanan. That Hashem says, or David HaMelech says, I have considered your blessings in the Chumash, and I have considered the curses. Right? The blessings, says David HaMelech, if you look in the parasha, if you look in the Chumash, start with an aleph. Right? You see at the top of the parasha, Im B'chukosai, starts with an aleph. And it ends, if you look on page 710, the next page, right, ends with a tof. Get that? Koimimius. Ends with a tof. Brachas, aleph to tof. Hashem will give us all the brachas. That makes sense. Things are running smoothly. Brachas, aleph to tof. Okay. But he says, I've also had a look at the curses. And the curses are what we call in Yiddish kapeya. It's the other way around. It starts with a vav. You see that? Ve'im loy. It's Pasuk 710, verse 14. Ve'im loy sishmuli, if you don't listen to me. Yeah? Does anyone have it? Yeah, ve'im. Starts with a vav. And ends, it goes to pages this, by the way. If you go to page 716, it ends with a hey. Yad Moshe. It says these are the things that Hashem told Moshe to give us. Ends with a hey. Yad Moshe. Ends with a hey. So it starts with a vav and ends with a hey, and it's the other way around. So it comes, yeah? It's the other way around, I guess, showing that it's like backwards, which is not, it's not going, things are not going smoothly, it's backwards. And then right away the Midrash says, however, Omar Rab Amin tells us, you know why it's backwards? Because actually it's a good thing. Because im zechisim, if you have a schus, hareini hoifech lehem klolos lebrachos, I'm going to switch the curses into blessings. These very curses that Hashem says I'm threatening you with, if you have a schus, those, not that I'll take them away. You understand? Not that I'll take them away and you only get the blessings. No, I'll take these curses and turn them into blessings. Because as I explained before, it's written in many Svarim that actually these curses contain, hidden in a hidden way, contain blessings that are more powerful than the blessings that are given at the beginning of the parasha. But we have to have the schus for Hashem to turn them around. That's the hint in the vav and the hay, switched around, that we can switch them around from curses into blessings. Good. So the first Rishon asks the question, that's very nice that Hashem promises us that it should, that if we have the schus, it'll be turned from blessings into curse, right? From curse into blessings. Okay. But what's the significance of the vav and the hay? Right? What's the significance of the vav and the hay? So I'll just share with you an interesting thing. First of all, one answer is very simple. What is vav and hay? It's part of Hashem's name, correct? Which name? Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, we know, is not the name of Din. You know, Hashem has different names. Elohim is a name of judgment. Vav-Kei, Vav and Hei, is part of Yud and Hei and Vav and Hei, which is Hashem's name, which is not the name of judgment. On the contrary, it's the name of Rachamim, name of mercy. So Hashem gives us all these terrible things, but it starts with a Vav and ends with a Hei to say that actually they could be turned around to Rachamim. If we do the right thing, Hashem can actually have Rachamim upon us, can have mercy upon us, and not only that, but they are embedded in Vav and Hey, because actually deep down these curses itself contain great blessing. They contain rachamim. They contain mercy. Okay? That's one pshat. There's another pshat from the son-in-law of the Maharsha called Rabbi Moshe Yitzchak Berabunin. And he says, he quotes a fascinating medrash. There's a very fascinating medrash that's very similar to a Gemara, but it's with more detail. It's a medrash that takes place before the destruction of the Second Temple, Second Mishnah Mikdash. That there was a famous story like this, that the Romans laid a siege around Yerushalayim, right? And it became a problem, and there was a big hunger. However, the Gemara says, and the Medrash says, that there were three very, very wealthy people in Yerushalayim, Nakdimon ben Gurion, Kalba Savu, and I've forgotten the third one, that they had storage houses of produce, so much that they had enough to sustain the whole Yerushalayim for years, 20 years or something, right? The problem was like this. The Yerushalayim then was split. It was split between the elders who was run by Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was one of the great sages. And young hotheads, which the Gemara refers to as biryonim. Like biryonim, gangsters. Like. The elders held, they were of the opinion that this is a decree of Min HaShemayim. We cannot fight this. And the Yerushalayim will be taken and will be destroyed. And we've got to do the best we can. It's probably better for us to surrender and not fight the Romans. We'll never win them. That was the Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, with the other elders. The Brionim held that no, we've got to go fight the Romans. We've got to fight them. So much so, what did the Brionim do? The Brionim, they went and sat and burnt these storage houses of these three wealthy men. So there was nothing, right? And then it became a desperate. So what happened was, Yochanan's whole story, Yochanan had to escape outside the wall. He had to get his whole thing out of Yerushalayim, and he went and had an audience with the Vespasian, a whole story. Now the problem was that Rabbi Yochanan himself had a nephew that was one of these Biryonim. And when Rabbi Yochanan heard that the storage houses were burnt, he says, the strange medrash, the medrash says, he screamed out and he said, Vai, like oy vey. Yeah? Terrible thing. So he got back to his nephew and got back to all the Biryonim, and they summoned him. And they were threatening him. They said, why did you say Vai? Why are you causing us problems? In other words, when Rabbi Yochanan said Vai, it wasn't just any guy saying, he was saying oy vey. Rabbi Yochanan said Vai, he's saying it's a terrible thing. So obviously people started to believe him. So Rabbi Yochanan saw he's in great danger. So he said, no, I didn't say vai, you misheard me. I said va, vav hey. Right? Oh, they said, oh, if that's the case, it's okay. We left you. So that's the medrash. So Frosh would say, what is that all about? Right? So he said, in other words, he says, no, I was happy that you did that. It was a good thing you did. Like, he had to get himself out. He was going to be killed otherwise. So the Frosh explained why. Because we know that vav hey is an expression of simcha. First of all, you see this in the Medrash, that Vai is an expression of anguish. And he said Vah, which means they were saying, let him off. So why is it a Lashon of Simcha? Why is it an expression of joy? So we know from another Chazal tell us that when it says, every time it says in the Tanakh, Vayehi, right? And it was, Vayehi b'mei, it was in the days of, it always spells out trouble. Vayehi b'mei Achashverosh, in the Megillah, what happened? Haman came along. In the Megillah of Rus, which many people read on the Chag HaShavuos, it says, Vayihi b'mei shvaita shoftim, it was in the days of the judges. What happens? Elimelech dies, his son-in-laws die, it's a whole tzaras. Says the Medrash, whenever, says the Gemara, whenever it says Vayihi, it spells troubled. Whenever it says Vehoya, and it will be, Vehoya, it will come to be, it's always an expression of joy. What are the first two letters of Vehoya? Vav and Hey. So that's what the Medrash is saying. That the curses in this week's parasha begin with the brachas are good, straightforward brachas are very nice. They begin with an aleph and end with a tof. However, the reprimands, they start with vav and end in a hey. They're very harsh. But if zechisem, if you have the schus, they'll be turned to joy, they'll be turned to brachas. Why? Look how they embedded in vav and hey, Hashem's name, and also vav and hey itself. Those two letters are an expression of joy. So which means that intrinsically they contain joy. Okay? So I want to give you an example. Now the Mefarshim tried to decode. They tried to decode. Where do we see? I mean, if you look in the straight translation of these things, it's geferlach. There are 48 of them, 48 reprimands, 48 curses, and they're very graphic and they're very tragic. Unfortunately, in Jewish history, they've all happened. Right? This is a very sad story of the Kloisenberger Rebbe. The Kloisenberger Rebbe, when he was freed from the camps, so it's well known that he right away he lost his whole family and everything, and then he right away threw himself into helping Yidden and to rebuild the Kloisenberger Chassidus and the whole thing. He was an amazing man. So in the camps there was right away a minyan and everything. So it came the parsha, I don't know which was this one or parsha's Kisovei, which one of them that has also the reprimands in the Teicha. So as I said before, the minhag is that when the Bal Koira gets to, he reads soft. Right? So that right away, that was like a few weeks after they were liberated. And it was this Parshas Ki Sove, I think. And it came to the, what time of the year? It was late, it was like September time, no? Or was this time of the year? Huh? Right now. So maybe it was this Parshas, the Bal Koira. So the Bal Koira came to the Toicha, and the Bal Koira suddenly went quiet. He's reading it quickly and quietly. So the Kloisenberger Rebbe calls out to him from the front of the shul, Hecher, Hecher, read loud. He didn't understand. So it's not the minhag. So the guy didn't do it for sure. So he screams out, Hecher, Hecher, read it loud, loud. So that's after, what was that all about? Everyone knows when it comes to Toicha, you read it softly. He said, yeah, that's because normally you read it softly because you don't want it to happen. These things have all happened during the war. He says, Adrabe, read it loud, let Hashem hear that we know that it's all happened and we don't want it to happen again. See, like he turned it all around. In other words, it's all happened, unfortunately. However, we have to understand, yeah, that's happened. We don't understand why. But the fact is, we also have to understand, like the Mefarshim said, that it does contain blessings, and we have to try our best to turn them in, to transform them from the curse into the blessings. Let me give you an example of how the Mefarshim explain about something that looks like a terrible curse can actually be an unbelievable blessing, a spiritual blessing at least. Let me just find the pasuk. Give me 1 second. Look on page 712. Right? Pasuk says like this. Pasuk 26. Pasuk says, "B'shivri lochem matei lechem." When I break for you the staff of bread, in other words, when you want to eat, Hashem says, "Well, what will happen is, v'ofu eser noshim lachvachem b'tanur echod." 10 women will bake their bread in one oven. V'yishivu lachvachem lamishkol. They'll bring back your bread by weight. You will eat and not become satisfied. What does that mean on the surface? It's a curse of terrible poverty. Almost there won't be much to bake. That 10 women were able to bake the breads in one oven because there'll be tiny breads. There won't be much to bake. There'll be everything will be precious. Everything, your little piece of bread will be weighed. Va'achaltem, and you're going to eat, but you won't become satisfied because there'll be too little. Right? So that's the on the surface. So in Kabbalah, there's a thing that this actually is a means something else completely, on a different layer. I'll give you an example. Lechem, bread, refers to Torah, as we know. Torah is compared to bread. The Gemara says that as a pasuk, Lechu lachmu belachmi, go and eat my bread, that refers to learning Torah. The women in the pasuk refer to the neshamas. We know that Hashem and the neshamas, like Chasan and Kala. Called HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Knesset Yisrael. Right. So the women means the Yid, the Neshama, the Neshama of a Jew. What's the significance of 10 women? 10 women is a reference to the 10 powers of the soul. Chochma, Bina, Das, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, and so on. So the Pasuk is saying, what is the positive message in this Pasuk? How can we turn this Pasuk around into a positive thing? But it says like this, that when a person learns Torah, Torah has to come together with life, meaning like this. There's two ways to learn Torah. Person can learn Torah in a way where it's just academic. He's learning Torah. He's learning a subject. That's not Torah. When we learn Torah, we have to learn Torah with excitement, with passion, right? With love of Hashem, with fear of Hashem, like the Shulchan Aruch says, when a person learns Torah, you have to know when you learn Torah, it's like Hashem's giving the Torah again from Har Sinai. And if we're just like Har Sinai, we trembled and we were happy and we were enthusiastic and we stood there with a great awe, so to whatever person's learned Torah should be like that. Because every time we learn Torah, it's something new and it's something amazing and something again that Hashem is giving the Torah all over again, right? So he says that's what it means. V'ofu eser noshim. 10 women should bake. Bake is a tanner, is an oven, a place of heat. That when you learn Torah, when you're engaging in bread, the Torah has to be infused with fire. And the fire has to come from a fire which is permeating all the 10 powers of the soul. The love, the fear, the enthusiasm, the ambition, every part of our being has to be infused with a fire, and that fire should be baking the bread. It should be breaking the lechem. The bread, the Torah that we learn should be baked, should be elevated, should be fired up by a fire which is baked in an oven which comes from the 10 powers of the soul. What kind of oven? Says the Pasuk, Tanur Echod. It should be one oven. The Tanur, the oven that comes from the Echod, from the one Hashem, from the connection to the one Hashem. They should be so excited that we should understand that we're learning Torah, we're not learning a subject. We're learning Hashem's wisdom, we're learning the infinite wisdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and through the Torah we're being connected to the Echo, being connected to Hashem. That should motivate us with an unbelievable yearning and love and fear of Hashem and so on and so forth, which will in turn bake our Torah, will infuse our Torah. So it should be a whole different type of learning Torah. There should be something that's weighed, something that's important. And then says the Pasuk, if you learn Torah that way, V'achaltem v'loisiz bo, you will eat and never become satisfied. Because Torah will be so exciting that you'll be able to review the Torah and learn it again and again. And like Rashi says in the Shema, that every single day the Torah will be like something new. You won't get tired of the Torah, you won't get full. Why? Because Torah is infinite. And therefore, v'achaltem, if you learn Torah, but you learn Torah not just as a subject, you learn Torah infused with love and fear of Hashem and excitement, and it's excitement that's coming from the Eser Noshim, from the 10 powers of the soul, and it's Betanur Echod, it's warm and it's fiery and it's passionate, and it's fired up by the Echod, the oneness of Hashem and your connection to the oneness of Hashem, then v'achaltem v'loisiz bo, you'll be able to eat, meaning learn Torah, and you won't become satisfied because there'll always be something new, it'll always be amazing, it'll always be like something new every single day that Hashem is giving us a Torah all over again, so to speak, every single day, like it was at Har Sinai. That's just one example of how the Mefarshim explain how the Pesukim can be interpreted into a positive way, into a brachadika way, and those, of course, you learn Torah that way, it brings amazing brachas. Which then goes back to the beginning of the Parsha again, which the Mefarshim ask a very interesting question. If the Bechukosai, at the beginning of the Parsha, he's talking about Torah learning, he's not talking about mitzvahs, then why does it use this? Okay, I know what it is. Then why does it use the expression teilechu, you shall walk? Right? In other words, if we'll be talking about mitzvahs, so that we understand, you walk in the ways of Hashem, right? But if it's talking about learning Torah, so teilechu, why do we have the mitzvah of why does it say walking? Okay? I'll just show you the interesting thing. I'm not going to go through all of it, obviously. But there's a very, very famous, in this week's parasha, a Orachaim HaKadosh. The Orachaim is a great commentary on the Chumash. And the Orachaim asks this question, what's the expression, Teilecha, you will walk? If we're talking about academic learning, we're learning Torah, why the walking? What's the walking? So the Orachaim gives 42 answers. I'm not going to go through all of them. 42. Amazing. Goes through one answer after another. Why is the word Teilecha, right? So I'll just quote you a few. He says one thing, for example, Teilecha, to teach us that a person's commitment to learning has to be so great that even Teilecha, even you're walking in the street, you're thinking about Torah. Like it says in the Shema, Uvelechtecha baderech, it's not just something you do as a subject when you sit at one place. Right? Or like the Medrash we said before, that a Torah has to be, we saw in Beautiful Torah that our legs carry us automatically to the places of learning. Then he says also another pshat is that Derech Teilechu, walking means walking in the way of a person, the regular life of a person. Then we learn Torah and we don't learn it as an academic subject like we said before, we learn it as Torah Hashem, then it impacts the rest of our life. So the B'chukosai, the learning Torah that we learn, Teilechu, then influences and inspires our whole derech, our whole walking around whole day. In other words, it becomes, our whole life becomes something that's imbued from the Torah. And so on and so forth. But also, another pshat that's not really in Aruch Chaim, but the pshat that's explained is like this. What does Taleichu mean? Taleichu means to really grow. So when a person, growing means, we know, we said before many times, growing means, that doesn't mean to incrementally grow. Grow means for a person to be able to be elevated to a whole new level. So when we learn Torah, a person can learn Torah and not grow. If a person learns Torah as a subject, then it's a subject. You can learn it, it's nice, it's stimulating, it's exciting, but you don't grow from it. But in b'chukoyset aleich, if you learn Torah with a commitment, or like we said over there, interpreting that particular pasuk, that we do it by inspiration, by a fire of the neshama, and we do it like with conviction and with real commitment, then taleicha, then we're able to grow properly. Then the Torah is not just an academic subject, but it causes us to completely grow out of who we are and to be able to be elevated to the next level and to become connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a much stronger way. Okay, we'll stop there. Those who are game, could you gather around the sign, please?